The moon dipped into the dark, slumberous sea, but already the sky over the land was turning to the colour of ripe orange at the approach of day. And Santan lay for only a few seconds after she woke. She was surprised that the two old people still lay beside the dead ash of last night's fire. But she left the camp hurriedly, knowing that the day's trek would begin before the sunrise. At a discreet distance from the camp, she squatted to relieve herself, then stripped off her rags and ran into the sea, gasping at the cold, invigorating water as she scrubbed her body with handfuls of sand. She pulled her clothing over her wet body and ran back to the camp. The old people were still wrapped in their leather cloaks and lying so still that Santan felt a moment of panic. But then Hani coughed throatily and stirred. "They are still alive anyway," Santan smiled, and assembled her few possessions, feeling virtuous, for usually Hani had to chivy her. But now the old woman stirred again and mumbled sleepily. Santan understood only the words, "Wait, rest, sleep." Then Hani subsided and pulled her cloak over her head again. Santan was puzzled. She fed a few sticks to the fire and blew up a flame, then sat to wait. Venus, the morning star, lay on the backs of the dunes, but paled and faded at the approach of the sun. And still the two San slept on. And Santan began to feel irritated by the inactivity. She was so strong and healthy already that she had actually been looking forward to the day's journey. Only when the sun cleared the tops of the dunes did Hani sit up and yawn and belch and scratch herself. "Guh?" Santan used the rising tone that changed the word into a question. "No, no," Hani made the negative waving sign. "Wait, wait. Moon, go there." And she pointed with a quick stabbing thumb at the dunes. "Go land?" Santan asked, not sure that she understood. "Go land," Hani agreed, and Santan felt a quick thrill. They were going to leave the shore at last. "Go now?" Santan demanded impatiently. Twice during the last few days, when they had stopped to make camp, Santan had climbed to the top of the nearest dune and stared inland. Once she had imagined the distant outline of blue mountains against the evening sky, and she had felt her spirits summoned away from this monotonous seascape towards that mysterious interior. "Go now," she repeated eagerly, and Owa laughed derisively as he came to squat at the fire. "The monkey is eager to meet the leopard," he said, "but listen to it squeal when it does." Hani clucked at him in disapproval, and then turned to Santan. "Today we will rest. Tonight we will begin the hardest part of our journey. Tonight, Nam child, do you understand that? Tonight with the moon to light us. Tonight while the sun sleeps, for no man or woman can walk hand in hand with the sun through the land of the singing sands. Tonight, rest now." "Tonight," Santan repeated, "rest now." But she left the camp and once again climbed up through the sliding, slippery sands to the top of the first line of dunes. On the beach, 400 feet below her, the two tiny figures sitting at the campfire were insignificant specks. Then she turned to look inland, and she saw that the dune on which she stood was a mere foothill to the great mountains of sand that rose before her. The colours of the dunes shaded from pale daffodil yellow through gold and orange to purplish brown and dark sang de boeuf. But beyond them she imagined she saw ghost mountains with rocky, crenellated peaks. Even as she stared, however, the horizon turned milky blue and began to waver and dissolve, and she felt the heat come out of the desert, a whiff of it only, but she recoiled from its scalding breath, and before her eyes the land was veiled by the glassy, shimmering veils of heat mirage. She turned and went down to the camp again. Neither Owa nor Hani was ever completely idle. Now the old man was shaping arrowheads of white bone, while his wife was putting together another necklace, fashioning the beads from pieces of broken ostrich shell, chipping them into coins between two small stones, and then drilling a hole through each with a bone sliver, and finally stringing the finished beads on a length of gut. Watching her work, Santen was reminded vividly of Anna. She stood up quickly and left the camp again, and Hani looked up from the string of beads.
"Namchalt is unhappy," she said. "There is water in the egg bottles and food in her belly," Owa grunted as he sharpened his arrowhead. "She has no reason to be unhappy."
"She pines for her own clan," Hani whispered,
and the old man did not reply. Both of them understood vividly and were silent as they remembered those they had left in shallow graves in the wilderness.
"I am strong enough now," Santan spoke aloud, "and I have learned how to keep alive. I don't have to follow them anymore. I could turn back to the south again, alone."
She stood uncertainly, imagining what it would be like, and it was that single word that decided her.
"Alone," she repeated. "If only Anna was still alive, if only there was somewhere out there for me to go, then I might attempt it."
And she slumped down on the beach and hugged her knees despondently.
"There is no way back. I have to go on, living each day like an animal, living like a savage, living with savages."
Then she looked down at the rags which barely covered her body.
"I just have to go on, and I don't even know where."
And her despair threatened to overwhelm her completely. She had to fight it off as though it were a living adversary.
"I won't give in," she muttered. "I just won't give in. And when this is over, I will never want again. I'll never thirst and starve, nor wear rags and stinking skins again."
She looked down at her hands. The nails were ragged and black with dirt and broken off down to the quick. She made a fist to cover them.
"Never again. My son and I will never want again. I swear it."
It was late afternoon when she wandered back into the primitive campsite under the dunes. Hani looked up at her and grinned like a wizened little ape, and Santen felt a sudden rush of affection for her.
"Dear Hani," she whispered, "you're all I have got left."
And the old woman scrambled to her feet and came towards her, carrying the finished necklace of ostrich shell in both hands. She stood on tiptoe and placed the necklace carefully over Santan's head and arranged it fussily down her bosom, cooing with self-satisfaction at her handiwork.
"It's beautiful, Hani."
Santan's voice husked.
"Thank you. Thank you so very much."
And suddenly she burst into tears.
"And I called you a savage. Oh, forgive me. With Anna, you are the sweetest, dearest person I've ever known."
She knelt so that their faces were level, and she hugged the old woman with a desperate strength, pressing her temple against Hani's withered, wrinkled cheek.
"Why is she weeping?" Owa demanded from beside the fire.
"Because she's happy."
"That," Owa opined, "is a most stupid reason. I think this female is a little moon-touched."
He stood up, and still shaking his head, began the final preparations for the night's journey.